Hi, my name is Anupama Bhagwat, and I play the Indian classical instrument called sitar. I'm from Bhilai, India, now living in Bangalore, India, and you're listening to Richmond Independent Radio.
This is an interview I did after Anupama Bhagwat played last night, and I was able to have a conversation with her at a lady who teaches at U of R Indian music, Nirmal Ji, at her home. And this will be a follow-up after the interview we did last week with the tabla player who performed with Anupama Ji last night. And we'll hear some excerpts from that concert also. But first, the interview.
Well, Anupama Ji, it was wonderful to hear you perform tonight with Mihir Ji. And I really was inspired by the performance this evening. It's great to see you back in Richmond again. I saw you first time at the Indian Festival last year.
Oh, yeah.
And then also you performed at University of Richmond, right?
Yes. Yeah. I'm really happy to be back here again, and the crowd here is great. Yeah. So really good experience performing here again.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming to Richmond. We, you know, we really value the opportunity to hear music like yours. It's just so beautiful and so inspiring, as I said. What have you been doing in the past year since you visited last? Have you been touring or just mostly in India?
I was mostly in India, yes, since last year and now. I did go to Europe once, but other than that, I had been performing in India at different festivals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And are there a lot of festivals that
music festivals? Yeah. Yes, some spanning even 130 years.
Wow,
they have been going on.
Mm-hmm.
So, about 4 or 5 major Indian festivals happen during the season of, you know, like December, January, February. Mm-hmm. Those are the 3 major music months where a lot of music goes on.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
of the good weather and, you know, the little cooler weather and things mm-hmm. like that. So,
and I think some of those performances are online as videos, right?
There. Yeah.
So people could watch them.
Yes.
What are the names of those festivals?
So one is the oldest one, as I was telling you, which, as I think, completed 139 years, is Harivallabh Sangeet Samaroh, which is in north,
mm-hmm.
In Punjab. It's a place called Jalandhar.
Mm-hmm.
Where it is named after a great musician, a saint, Baba Hari Vallabh.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where this festival had started. Then there is a very renowned festival in Kolkata, which is mm-hmm. also Calcutta, called Dover Lane Music Conference. Then there is, in the west of India, there is Savai Gandharva,
mm-hmm.
which is... which used to be done by Pandit Bhimsen Joshi, who did it in memory of his guru, Savai Gandharva. He was a great stalwart of music too. So these are like the big, really big ones. And then there are many smaller, like the second tier music festivals, like Ustad Amir Khan Samaroh, then Alauddin Khan Samaroh. A lot of these festivals are based... or in memory of great musicians.
Yeah.
And they either are organized in the birthplace of these musicians mm-hmm. or even otherwise just in memory of those by either their students or mm-hmm. government of India.
Yeah.
And so forth.
Yeah, yeah. And you've... I want to give my listeners a little bit of background on your career. You started at the age of 8, is that correct?
Or 9.
9, yeah.
I started playing violin when I was 5, because my father used to play violin.
Mm-hmm.
Professionally, but very mm-hmm. passionately. So in our house, like my father's side, my aunt played the sitar, my father's elder brother, he played the sitar as well, so... It was in the family, but nobody had taken it as a profession.
Yeah.
So, you know, I kind of just started with violin when I was 5 and singing and all those. But then when I was 9, my uncle was changing his sitars, and he thought his older sitar I could probably, because it was a smaller, comparatively a little smaller than the standard ones. So he thought it would be good for me to also try it out. And my good luck was that in Bhilai, in it's a small town in Chhattisgarh.
Is that where you were
where
born?
I was born and I grew up there. So there, a great stalwart and a great maestro of music, my Guruji, Pandit Bimlendu Mukherjee, he was residing there because he was also a general manager for a big steel plant. Which is the Bhilai steel plant, which is one of the biggest in Asia, and it was so that was the reason for the development of that so-called jungle that was there before
the steel plant.
The steel plant, and
otherwise a very small village
of thing, but it developed because of the steel plant and became cosmopolitan because many people from all parts of India had accumulated over there to, because of job opportunities in that steel plant. And my Guruji was one of the pioneers of the steel plant because he was a, by profession, a geologist and a mining engineer. So he was responsible for the raw materials for the Bhilai steel plant. So he was the general manager there. But he consciously did not go for music as a profession, but his love for music was so, it was just tremendous.
So strong that, that he couldn't, he had to do it no matter what.
And he, that was something that he would do, I mean, not because he was into another profession, he would do any less music.
Yeah.
He would do the same amount what a professional would be doing.
Wow.
So it was like he was doing two jobs solidly, equal, in equal proportion.
And taking on students.
Yes. And because he was not exactly in profession, he did not have competition. And so he was openly interacting with many other musicians and, you know, and sharing all that experience and knowledge to his students and things like that. So it was my great fortune that I was in the same city where he was. And then after I learned from another teacher when I was 9, I had learned with Sri R.N. Verma, who used to come and teach at home. Then after learning the basics and things like that, he only suggested that whatever he could teach me, he has kind of given it all.
Yeah.
And but I have a lot more potential, so I should be studying with
Guruji.
So when I went there first, my dad and myself, we went there, you know, that time.
First day that you met him.
Yeah, my dad met him. He was telling as to what his expectations were from a student that... Not that, you know, the student would... His expectations were very simple. It is to carry forward the music. So if you think you will be determined to take it forward, then I will start teaching you. That were, those were his words. So I was not, you know, I knew that it was really a commitment of a lifetime. It's not something to be done just as a learning a subject or a forgetting about or a hobby or anything. If I'm going to learn from now with this guru, I had to commit as a lifetime. And I think I was liking the instrument and the music enough to make the decision, although I was only 13. But I think I was very happy and when he accepted me as a student.
So we've been listening to an interview with Anupama Bhagwat, who played a sitar concert last night with Mihir Kalyanpur on tabla. And that was a great opportunity to speak with her. It was very late in the evening, and I assume she was very tired. But what a lively conversation, talking about music and her music in particular and her studies of sitar back at home, and then, you know, what she's been doing since the last time she visited Richmond, which was last year. Again, awesome opportunity to speak with her, and I'm glad to be able to share it with all you listeners out there tonight. So thanks for tuning in. We're going to hear excerpts from our concert, also just excerpts, though, so don't be surprised if things sound a little bit edited. We are trying to get in the great conversation as well, and I don't want to give away too much of her music because she just gave me permission to use little portions, and these pieces are very long, so it's actually almost criminal to chop them up at all, but I think it's better than nothing. So we'll hear the rest of the interview here and some bits from her concert, which are coming up next, and stay tuned. So you're listening to WRIR LP 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and don't forget, the Commonwealth of Notions is happening, should be right now, over at the Broadberry. So that's the last night of that great music festival that benefits WRIR. And the James River Park System is a treasure of our city. Let's work hard to keep it that way. Litter anywhere in the park is not only ugly, it damages the park's environment and will harm wide variety of plants and animals that make their home there. Please play your part in keeping your park clean. Trash and recycling receptacles are located at most park accesses. Better still, take your fishing litter, your cans, your wrappers, your peels home. Leave the park in its native condition. Don't trash your treasure. The James River Outdoor Coalition is a local nonprofit and stewardship organization devoted to improving James River Park system and offering user-driven advice and education on park issues. To learn more about your park, search JROC on Facebook. That's the James River Park, James River Outdoor Coalition. Okay, so here's the first excerpt from Anupama G's concert last night with Mihir Kalyanpur on tabla.
Hello, my name is Mandar Deshpande. I am one of the organizers from the organizing committee. Would like to welcome all Richmond Indian classical music lovers. So on behalf of Richmond music lovers, Anupama ji and Mihir ji, we welcome you both. So this program is supported by two of our Indian organizations, Indian Association of Virginia and Greater Richmond Marathi Mandal, the two local community organizations. At this time, I would like to request Milind Pense, President of India Association of Virginia, just to introduce the artist. Thank you.
Thank you, Mandar. Hello, friends. Like Mandar said, quick introduction of the artists. As you know, these days it's very easy to look things up on Google, I'm going to keep it brief. Anupama Bhagwat, the sitar player amongst us, she has made a mark as one of the few women sitar players in India, and a very, very talented one at that. She was born in Bhilai and was introduced to sitar at an early age of 9. She is one of the leading disciples of late Pandit Bimalendu Mukherjee of the Imdakhani Gharana, and her technical virtuosity has been lauded worldwide. She has traveled extensively around the world, in Europe, obviously in Asia, as well as Latin America, Europe, Northern America, and so forth. So that's Anupama Bhagwat. Accompanying her is going to be Mihir Kalyanpur. He was born in Bangalore, and he was introduced to tabla at an early age of 7. Folks have been at it for a very long time. Not Mihir so much, but he's very, very young. He's in his early 20s. Mihir has been undergoing advanced training for the past several years from Ustad Shabir Nisar of Hyderabad, who is a disciple of legendary tabla nawaz Sheikh Dawood Khan Sahab. At a very early age, Mihir has been appreciated by stalwarts and doyens of Indian classical music. At a very early age, actually, he was one of the renowned sitar players. Ustad Shahid Parvez Khan specifically expressed his desire to play with Mihir. So he has been very good from a very early age. So I present to you Anupama and Mehr. Thank you.
Good evening, friends. Namaskar. I'm very happy to be back in Richmond. I was here last year, and I would like to thank Mandarji and his organization and all of you who have made this concert possible today. Thank you all for coming, and I would like to start the concert with an evening rag. In Indian, North Indian classical music, we have ragas which have been divided into different time cycles of the day depending on the mood, and I have chosen an early evening rag, Sham Kalyan. Kalyan in Sanskrit means may best come to you. May Shubhamastu Kalyanamastu is what, as we say. And Shyam is the darkness of Krishna, or the dark clouds. And it is the joy that we get when we see the beauty of Krishna or beauty of dark clouds, along with the blissful feeling of wishing good for all. So, Raag Shyam Kalyan. In this, I will present Alap, which is a slow description of the Raag, followed by Jod, wherein a pulse-like rhythm is introduced, and then the tempo increases. That will be the first part of the improvised description, followed by two compositions where Mihir will join me on tabla. I will play two compositions set to 16-beat rhythmic cycle. First a slow composition, followed by a faster composition. Raag Shyam Kalyan.
You started studying with your guru. How often would you meet with him?
Sometimes twice a week. Mm-hmm. Sometimes because of his busy schedule, it would be a gap of, or even my exams, school exam, because I was also doing my education assignment. So because of that, there would be some gaps. But mostly it was twice a week or something. Mm-hmm. And the initial years were just to understand the vastness of the music, and until then I was learning, just fiddling with the instrument, just learning the basics of it, and treating it only as an instrument. Mm-hmm. But later on, when I started studying with him, that's when I realized that it is music which I have to learn, not just playing an instrument. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? I mean, instrument is only in the typical literal terms, instrument for the music.
Right, it's a means.
It's only a means. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So now to make it a part of me, up to a point where I don't realize it is an external thing,
yeah,
and becomes a part of me,
yeah,
was the next journey. And amazing techniques and, you know, like the ease with which my Guruji taught,
mm-hmm,
as to how I can adopt it,
mm-hmm,
to become my extension, and, you know, not feeling the burden of holding an instrument,
but
yeah,
and it's almost like a singer finding their voice.
Voice, exactly.
So this instrument, yeah, is your singing through it.
Yes. So another thing here, since you brought it up very appropriately, so the style that I was learning here.
I was going to ask you. Yeah. There's many styles of sitar playing, as with tabla. Yes. As Mihir explained.
So this particular style is based on the vocal style of Indian classical music. So what we call as gayaki style. So it doesn't limit itself to the instrumental style or the instrumental beauty of it, but also the sustain of this instrument was used to bring out the continuity of voice, meaning if I pluck the instrument and let the sound resonate, that continuous sound was used to modulate and bend as if we are singing,
mm-hmm,
the voice. So those were the things, the intricacies that I learned in the first 10 years or so with my Guruji. And that was something very overwhelming because I had never experienced all those things before. And
yeah,
it was a slow progress for me. I was not like a great, you know,
prodigy.
I don't think...
Although it seems like you must have had some
talent.
Yeah,
the natural talent was there. But then I find it, you know... I don't know if every... I don't really believe in the prodigy term.
Mm-hmm, right.
Because I feel everybody is equally capable of doing any art form depending on what exposure a person gets.
Yeah.
It is only the amount of exposure in the initial years that you are getting makes you a prodigy or not.
And a commitment from within.
Yes. So, so this was the initial journey, and then understanding the music, the vastness, because the style that my Guruji, he would sing, and I had to emulate the same sound through my instrument.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it was not like he was playing and showing me what exactly I had to play, and I had to just look and copy. It was more of absorbing everything, and that's what Indian music is about.
Mm-hmm.
It is the reason why we study from one guru and take this forward is because it is an oral tradition. We don't write or read music, right? Mm-hmm. So it is more of absorbing everything and then reproducing it with your own identity.
Mm-hmm.
So you are not just learning a subject, but you are evolving as a musician.
Yeah.
So
and processing it through your own
intellect, yes.
And it comes out in a unique way every time you play
because you are a unique individual.
Yeah.
And the same exposure given to another person, and they bring it out, it would be a different,
mm-hmm,
style. So taking into account that God has made everybody, you know, unique and given unique qualities, the music should also become an individual expression and not just a standard format.
Yeah. You know? Going back to the way that your Guruji taught you by singing, I noticed tonight you actually sang a bit of a folk song and then played it. Would that be an example of something he would sing to you, or was he also singing the notes in a different way to you?
So, yes, the composition, of course, he would sing, and the lyrics, what he would explain, because to be able to play and do justice to the composition, I would have to understand what exactly is being expressed through the lyrics.
So compositions that he would be singing to you, would be actually based on songs with lyrics, actual lyrics.
Not all of them.
Because I don't want to get confused with what we were talking about with Mihir, with the tabla sounds, the syllables, you know, the syllables.
Yeah.
Was there anything similar to that in the way you learned?
Well, there are some compositions just based on the sitar strokes, which we use. Those were the instrumental compositions. So that, we use dira dira dara, dara dira dira. So the stroke, upward stroke is called the da.
Da.
The down stroke is called the ra. And when you play it together, it was called as dira.
Dira.
So if I sing, suppose, da 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 da. Something
you know
like
which
that.
Way to
Dada,
aim your
fingers. Aim the fingers, yeah.
And there's the notes there too.
Yeah.
Just,
so,
wow.
Yeah. So da 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 da.
Wow.
So these were the instrumental compositions, and then there would be vocal compositions with lyrics in them. So yeah, so we learned them all, and this is the way I sang it. He would sing, and I would have to play it with the same.
Wow!
So that was the style. And then also, not only that, the slow portions that I was playing in the concert. If you would notice how one note to another note, would be explored, and how slowly another note would unfold.
Yeah.
So all those musical expressions. Sometimes, not only just singing, he would also sometimes play it and show, or one day he would play a different... He used to play 13 instruments.
Wow.
Not just sitar, but 13, sarangi, sarod, surbahar, many other.
Yeah.
So, some days he would start with sarangi and I would have to just copy that and try to reproduce the same thing.
Yeah.
And then there would be a lot of scope of, me just playing on my own and as if performing for him and showing him what I have absorbed. And then he would correct here and there. And that was the whole process.
Hmm. And a lot of these songs, can you tell me about some of the different songs that had actual lyrics that, such as the one this evening that you sang briefly and then started to play? What were the lyrics? Can you do a basic summary of what those lyrics were about?
Yeah, sure. So, a lot of our traditional compositions, lyrics are based on the love of Radha and Krishna, as they describe, which is again, if you consider it just in the literal meaning, it is probably love of two individuals, but then... if you go beyond and look at the spiritual meaning, it is the love of a person with the supreme soul, or a soul with the supreme soul, and the journey. And that's why
separation,
longing, everything comes there. And it can just not only be at a platonic, love relationship between two individuals, but it goes much higher as your own search for yourself, and goes into more spiritual form, basically, where you are longing to meet the supreme energy, and where you experience the meeting, but then you lose it again, and then you long for that meeting again, where you find that peace, that bliss, and all those things. So... there is a lot of spiritual element in these compositions, and expressed in different ways. Sometimes it is pathos, sometimes it is romance, sometimes it is just separation, and sometimes it is just happiness all around. So bliss, as you call. So all these compositions are really beautiful when you study the lyrics and when you. And they also help in understanding the mood of the rag that we are trying to play there.
by Pandit Dinkar Kaikeyi.
They would create a mood inside you.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have to absorb that in your own way and be able to present it or recreate in your with your own individual expression of that mood.
Mm-hmm.
Suppose there is sadness.
Mm-hmm.
You express sadness, but when it, you express, when you feel the sadness. But when you start expressing it, it becomes your sadness.
Right. Yeah.
So that is the difference. So when the raga is played, I mean, you could ask me a question as to, you know, I play the same raga, this person plays the same raga. So what is the difference if it is the same raga, the same notes? Still, each time a different individual is playing, it will sound different.
My
or even myself.
Different.
Yeah, or even myself, if I'm playing it today,
mm-hmm.
if I play 10 days later, it will still sound different.
Yeah, yeah.
Because my feelings have changed from today to 10 days later.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
So it is a very deep subject, basically, that we are dealing with here.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just entertainment, but there's this
a lot of spiritual
more,
yeah,
kind
connection.
Of a more
yeah.
all-encompassing connection with, you know, the divine and the soul through music,
yes.
and connection with your audience too. I
yes.
noticed some of the people in the audience were you know, kind of driven to mutter or say wow after a certain, you know,
yeah.
there's some sort of,
yeah, and that is the Indian
of
way of listening, and it is actually very much encouraged.
Yeah,
and artists,
certain passages are just so
wow, kya baat hai, these things, meaning you're appreciating that particular thing that had just come out,
that
you know,
phrase,
that
or
phrase,
whatever,
yeah. So and because Indian music was mostly in chambers, you know, like in small gatherings,
mm-hmm.
and it was a very intimate setting in which the audience would be, you know, it's not like in huge theaters,
yeah.
With a lot of distance between the audience. It
and
was
everyone's
very,
supposed
like,
to be quiet.
Yeah. So we were like, just as we are sitting here and conversing, a music concert converses with its audience.
That's great. Wow.
So that's why that interaction was also very encouraging to an artist.
Yeah.
When suddenly somebody says, wow. So that, you know, that creates another, that gives another motivation to do another, a next step, another phrase. Not just the internal feed and the internal inspirations that you're getting, but you're also getting a connecting, because you have already connected with all these people through your music. So now it is, it's not just inside one individual, it's like a collective thing that is being happening.
I notice sometimes you, you'll be playing, you'll be very immersed in the notes, and then sometimes you'll just look up sometimes and just to see the crowd, right? That must be an interesting thing to see people's faces while you're playing.
Yeah, it's true.
I certain moments tonight, I was actually tears of joy or tears of something were coming up. And there's these certain notes that you do. I mean, I play guitar, but and there's a lot of room for expression with those frets. But with a sitar, those frets are, there's so much deeper for you to press in and make that voice
sound
do different things. Yes. It's really sounding like a voice when you're doing these pressing on the strings like that in certain ways. And I also noticed you shifting some of the frets at certain points.
Yeah, they are movable frets, and not all the notes are present in the fretboard.
So you have to adjust.
We have to adjust a little bit, depending on the ragas that we are playing. There would be one, like say, flat notes in two of the frets are not given.
Right.
So if we have to choose a rag where we have to play those notes as flat, we shift them up, or you know, something.
In the middle of your performance. Like
while
you're playing,
it's
amazing. And I saw, you know, there's all kinds of little adjustments you have to make just to keep the thing in tune, right?
Yeah,
now, so.
Because these are very sensitive and delicate instruments. And the sitar, the gourd, the tumba, the round thing, it is made of gourd.
Yeah,
natural. Then it is covered with wood.
Mm-hmm.
So everything change, you know, can affect slightly. Even there is a slight difference in the temperature, it can change the wooden, you know, the adjustments and everything.
So your ear must have to be really good.
Really,
to
yes.
Play,
yeah.
You know? Just maybe a couple more questions. I mean, I guess I was really very inspired by that one rag jog.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me about that one? Anything that
you
could tell me about that
jog? Is actually colloquial for yoga, which is also known as yoga nowadays. Now, what is yoga? Yoga is nothing but yoga. Yoga is meeting, meeting of two souls, or meeting of soul with supreme soul. So it is that emotion that is being brought out.
A meeting.
Yeah. Yes. So
such a beautiful scale in that one.
Yes. Yeah. So not only just the meeting, but the entire process of meeting, from the very basic to the actual meeting. So it is the longing that has to be expressed, and when the actual meeting happens, that is also to be expressed. So every aspect comes out through this beautiful scale. And then once the scale has created an impression on oneself, then the self comes into picture and starts expressing in its own way.
Wow.
So that's how I would put the drag.
Thank you. what is the importance of music to you, and how what would you say to people who might in the West here, a lot of I notice in India there's a lot of importance put on music and art and dance. In the West, I think sometimes music is given the back seat and not seen as something respectable. So what's the importance of music in our culture in the world, really, to you?
I think music, even in India or anywhere in the world, I mean, I still meet a lot of people who think, yeah, it's an art form, okay, but then what about intellectual things? What about, what about the actual professions, actual careers, you know?
Yeah, doctor, lawyer.
Doctor, lawyer, yeah. So there's always a competition. Not competition, there is always this challenge of being treated as a secondary profession.
Right.
But it is unfortunate because I feel not just because you want to be a musician or not just because you want to take it as a career, but music should be a part of your life, of just as education is a part of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Because the more and more I research on or more and more I teach, or the more I'm traveling with the music, my belief becomes even stronger to the fact that if you learn music in your initial years and take it forward to whatever time possible and make it a part of it, it not only gives you company,
mm-hmm.
you can have something, you know, like you don't have to depend on people to give you company.
Music,
you know, your music
be
itself,
there to,
yeah,
to provide you
encouragement
and
expression. Yeah, I feel it makes you very strong from inside, because eventually it is self-expression. And people commit suicide, people go through drugs, people do all sorts of, you know, things because they are insecure from within. But music gives you that security.
Yeah.
And I have seen, in my own personal growth, I find as a student, in school, in college, I'm able to handle different kind of pressures because I know whatever every world might think of me, I know I have something where I feel myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I can always come back to that myself.
Yeah.
So it is life lessons that music is giving you. And so not necessarily, if you don't want to make it a career, that's fine. But I still feel, just as we encourage our children to go learn math, go learn English, do we actually ask whether you want to go to school or you want to stay at home and play video games? We don't give them a choice.
No.
We just tell them, you have to go to school, you have to go to kindergarten, you have to study up to high school, then whatever. We have decided the course of our children lives because we know that is good for them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So why give a choice when it comes to art? Why give a choice when it comes to music?
Yeah.
You can always tell them, this is good for you, start doing this, just as you do math, just as, yes, eventually they may go out and do something else, that's fine,
or
but at least they have been exposed to it.
Yeah.
And it has been scientifically proved now, many, you know, and there are so many videos, so many researches that prove that music develops your brain in such a way that you become good in many other areas, or in your work area, or
mm-hmm.
in your cognitive
yeah,
skills,
yeah.
and all those things. So those are anyway the first-hand benefits of learning music. But what I was telling previously, it teaches the life lessons. It
mm-hmm.
makes you stronger internally, that you don't have to seek these external so-called relief systems that,
right.
you know, like which
false.
Alcohol
yeah.
or, you know, drugs or any addictive things which we feel that may give us security, but
right.
actually they are doing the opposite.
Destructive,
they're
yeah.
destructive.
Yeah.
But instead of going into that, if you expose a child to music, at least he or she will try to be in, you know, try to find solace with this
yeah,
art that
peace
you have, that you
wow.
have given in the beginning. So I would definitely suggest everyone should be given an exposure to music
yeah.
in very childhood. And children are like sponge, you know, they absorb what they see, they absorb what they get.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. Well, I was lucky to grow up with parents who, you know, had a record collection, and eventually was lucky, as you were, to find a teacher. But, you know, it must have been incredibly lucky for you to have a family that was musical. Yes. and then that accepted your choice to play music. That's yes. very important too.
Yes.
On that subject, you are a female sitar player, and that's seen as something that's not as common. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean,
have you faced any struggle through just being a female musician?
Well, as I said, when I started learning, I never thought I was doing something out of ordinary because of my gender.
Yeah.
You know, I just thought it is meant to be learned.
You loved it too.
Yeah, I loved it, and I'm learning it. It never occurred to me that I'm one of those few women who are learning or who are going to perform. Because I never learned it with the purpose of performing, even.
Really?
Yes. Up until I graduated from my college, until then I didn't decide whether I would do it full-time as a profession.
Yeah.
But I would do it passionately, that was for sure. That was my commitment.
Right. So when you decided to do it, you gave it your all.
Yeah. Yes. But then, whether I will make it a career or not, that was
the
later.
The final step.
Final step. But so it was a little, then slowly when I started performing and people started recognizing, and then they started telling, oh, among, you know, you being a woman, you're doing...
You're special because you're...
Great or whatever.
An amazing star player and you're a woman.
So the... But personally, I still don't look at it as something... I mean,
It doesn't define who you are.
Yeah, who am I? Because it is eventually music which is more important for me, not me as an individual. But yes, I am also proud of the fact that I'm a woman, and if I'm able to still do it, and if I'm able to set an example to many other women, then I will be very happy.
Like the idea of, you know, access to education and equal opportunities for
in
women
same,
as well as
yeah,
you
in
know,
the
those
same in the same lines. If we and I have received emails and I have received this feedback that you are our inspiration and
from other girls growing up,
and they really want to start playing sitar because they have seen that it is now.
They've seen you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Being possible, and you know, taboos are going off, and the social society is accepting these things, so they are getting encouraged that way.
Yeah.
So that is definitely, I would say, very good as a change. Personally, for me, my journey is irrespective of the gender.
Yeah.
It is my musical journey. So.
Yeah. In terms of preserving the legacy of Indian classical music, do you think that legacy is in danger, or is have things changed so that it's...
Well, yes. I mean, things are changing, and it's good to move forward, but then we should also hold on to some of the values which our traditions have given us, so that we can keep this art form in the same spirit of handing it over
to the future, as your guru as passed have, on to
yes,
you, and
as we have received it. And I mean, social networking and getting in touch with the world and connection, it's all very good, it's all very important. But at the same time, having a time to sit with yourself is also important.
Mm-hmm.
So in the effort of just, you know, being out there all the time, if we forget the peaceful moments that we have with ourselves, it is something to think about.
Yeah.
And
then there's also this ancient tradition of music that,
mm-hmm.
as you explained earlier, is only really passed on by the oral tradition.
Oral tradition, yes.
So if there are no students that are interested in learning, then that tradition won't continue,
yeah.
right?
I mean, it's just like, I come across some people, oh, I learned sitar from YouTube. And so I'm thinking, maybe you learned how to play the instrument, but... as I explained in before also, it is not just playing an instrument as an instrument, but making it a part of you.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes when you have a teacher passing on the actual art form.
Yeah.
And you being open to evolve as a student and not just learning it as a subject and, just learning a course or taking a course of 15 days or... because that beats the purpose of learning.
It's not easy to learn.
No.
But it's once you do learn it, it's something that young students can feel really proud of.
Yes.
I mean, this is such an ancient tradition.
Yes.
Something that.
And I have seen so many Westerners.
Yeah.
Being so much interested in this
mm-hmm.
art form, they come to India. They stay there and they want to live there just because they want to experience this whole the beauty of this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really appreciating. We should appreciate the fact that and I'm sure they would be getting something out of it, that they have left their country and they're traveling so far. And something that even Indians who are drifting away from it should learn from, that it's your own roots and you have to respect it and try and preserve it as much as possible.
Well, again, thank you so much, Anupama ji, and I'm glad that we were able to speak, and so feel so lucky to have been able to hear you perform tonight, and thanks again.
Thank you very much. The pleasure was all mine.
Yes.
Next, I will play Rag Jog. In this, I will play a short ala followed by one composition in Madhyalaya Teen Tal, which is 16 beats again, but at a medium tempo. So, Rag Jog.
Thank you.
Bye.